8, Ginsburg v. United States. We're ready, Mr. Jacobs, whenever you are. Please proceed.
May it please the court, Tim Jacobs for plaintiffs. This case presents a simple fact pattern and may be resolved on the basis of longstanding federal income tax principles under the recovery of capital doctrine.
Can I ask you just as a preliminary matter? I think there's something in the record here that this particular situation under New York law, there's since been amendments so that this particular way of doing tax credits no longer exists on the books.
Is that there have been a number of amendments to New York law. In the original, I think, version, it covered both site preparation costs and tangible property costs, which would be the building. New York has since limited portions of the credit to, I guess, cut down on the number of credits for tangible property. Okay. The other amendment that they made is the revenue concerns caused them to defer some of the payments, and we see that happening in this case. Whereas generally when you filed the tax returns, or the folks, or the taxpayers here filed their tax returns, they should have been entitled to receive the credit at that point in time, but New York basically deferred the payments for some years.
Does the brownfield program still exist?
It does. It does.
Where did the Court of Federal Claims find a conspiracy involving the labels used by the Ginsburgs and New York?
This was the court's terminology was that that both New York and the Ginsburgs had been manipulated, which I found to be a pretty strong word.
I'm reading from your brief, 21-22. Right. That is, the CFC was convinced that the labels used by the Ginsburgs in their motion papers and New York in its statutes to describe the payment somehow evinced a conspiracy between those parties,
right,
to manipulate the federal income taxation laws.
Right.
I seem to remember from taking the bar in 1977 that a conspiracy is an agreement among two or more persons to commit an unlawful act or a lawful act in furtherance thereof, or with some act.
Right, Your Honor. And where the
where did you get a conspiracy?
Where the Court of Federal Claims drew that was from actually the Sunoco case, that there was a manipulation, that New York had set up the program basically as a reimbursable credit in order to somehow create
so
a tax.
So where do you get a you say that the court found a conspiracy. Where's the conspiracy found in the court's decision?
Well, I'm using the word uses the word manipulate in that reference.
Well, the reference by the court is thus to call this payment a refund.
Correct.
Would allow plaintiffs in the state of New York to manipulate federal income tax law.
Right.
You think he's suggesting a legal conspiracy by that, or you're offended by that?
Well, I don't think there's anything. I mean, I think the issue here is the Judge Hodges seemed to believe that the fact that this is a refundable credit was a problem, that it was designed in some form or fashion.
New York to shift the burden to the United States.
Right. And that's where I'm saying it is it suggested there was some conspiracy. I mean, my terminology, manipulate, is a pretty strong term, and here it's used at both the taxpayers and the state.
Can you manipulate the tax laws in a lawful fashion? I thought that's what they were designed for.
Well, I'm sorry for using that terminology. I think I think the plaintiffs here manipulating the tax code is something that I is strong, that's strong terminology, when it says both New York and the taxpayer has done that.
Let's just talk about that question. So you say this is a refund, but it's not a refund in the way, don't you accept that most people usually think of a refund for unpaid, for taxes, for money you've already paid, you get a refund for paid taxes?
Right. Right. That's the traditional sense. Refundable credits, however, are used at the federal level all the time. You get the earned income tax credit. You get the American Opportunity Credit. You've got the Affordable Care Act credit. All of those are refundable credits, meaning that there is a portion of it that's applied to the tax liability, and there's a portion of it that's refundable. It is designed in a way that it effectively...
So in this instance, let's say you have a piece of property in New York under the laws that exist.
Right. Then.
And it's got some pollution problems. And in order to prevent that pollution from leaching out, you put down a foundation, which you might need for the building anyway.
Right.
But that foundation blocks the pollution. And as a result, the state of New York says, okay, Brownfield, you're entitled to a credit on this.
Right.
And, the state refunds some of your taxes. Let's say that the foundation costs $2 million and they refund $500,000.
Right.
That you paid in New York taxes. So that other million and a half, the feds are going to pay. Is that, that's your position?
It's not our position. In substance, what this credit is a reimbursement of capital expenditures. Our position is, under well-established federal income tax law, the recovery of capital doctrine, that's it. That portion is a recovery of capital by definition, which is not taxable. It is a reduction in the basis of the property. And to your honors...
So what happens to the million and a half?
The million and a half stays invested, and there's a reduction of basis. It works exactly like the federal income tax code, which
right.
If you're looking at capital accounts, tax law section 21 of the New York law follows, is chargeable to capital account for the site preparation component. It is
so we're only talking
cost
about the half,
based.
We're only talking about the half million that New York gives you back.
Right.
Okay.
The half million is the refundable portion, mm-hmm. which is a reduction of basis. It is not taxable income for federal income tax purposes.
Because
of the recovery of capital doctrine. It is similar to...
Is there some way you cannot spend that money? That happened.
You can spend the money on, at that point in time, like any other recovery of capital. For example, the government uses the sales scenario. I buy stock 2 years ago. I sell the stock today. My basis in that was, let's say, $80. Today I'm selling it for $100. I'm pocketing $100. I have that in my pocket. I could use that for whatever I want.
Yeah, but there's no sale.
And there's only $20
of gain. There's no sale. There's nothing in the record to evidence that there's any contemplation of a sale.
But the recovery of capital doctrine is not limited to sales. Where the Court of Federal Claims went wrong is it said that the recovery of capital doctrine is limited to sale of goods. And the government acknowledges in its brief that that's not correct, what the Court of Federal Claims really meant was it was a sale of capital assets. Well, that's wrong. They're both wrong because recovery of capital doctrine applies in any number of instances. It's a fundamental income tax principle. It applies to insurance recoveries. It applies to settlements and damages claims, contractor payments, gambling winnings. This court in California, in Hawaiian Sugary Refiner Company, said it applies to tax refunds, recovery of capital doctrine. That's not a sale either.
Well, hang on. You're confusing me because I asked you if there's any restriction. You said no on how they can spend the money. But in the blue brief at 25, you argued that the Ginsburgs don't have complete dominion and control over the Brownfield credits.
They don't. I'm saying as a general matter, recovery of when you have a recovery of capital, it doesn't matter. if you have complete commitment. Because you can use in the stock
example. No, we're talking apples and oranges.
Well, I'm saying to answer your question, there were considerable restrictions.
You answered my question. You said they could spend the money any way they wanted.
They can't. In a general sense, I said it doesn't matter for recovery of capital purposes. What I would say here, the credit, sure, they can spend that. They may have to repay it, though. There is the restrictions here. Unlike the off-the-shelf credit that I think Your Honor referred to earlier, this is not off-the-shelf. This is an, there is a brownfield cleanup agreement with the state.
Right,
with
so they can recoup the payment. So the limita- is there any limitation be or restriction beyond recouping the payment? Is there fraud or something like that?
There is, and I think the government even says for good cause, which is quite broad.
Which is sort of not in the nature of fraud necessarily, but if you're not doing what the commitment with the state was in order for you to get that benefit, anything right. beyond that in terms
so
of
So there's an environmental easement, Your Honor, that has to be filed and is recorded.
Yeah.
The environmental easement and the agreement are not even mentioned in the opinion, but if there's a violation or any of the protocols, and that environmental easement, by the way, is in perpetuity. That is on this property.
Right, but if there's a violation of what the agreement or the understanding was between the owners and the state, that's the circumstance. I'm asking if there's any other restriction on your use of the funds.
Just like any other recovery of capital, once I've received...
Can you answer my question? Then you can explain it. But is there any restriction beyond some recoupment of payment if there's a violation in what the understanding was of the party?
There are restrictions in this case. I'm saying that our position is that is not relevant because under Glenshaw Glass, which the government is relying upon, there is the first requirement is the accession to wealth. That's where the recovery of capital doctrine comes in. And we don't satisfy that. That requirement's not satisfied. We win on that basis under that requirement. Complete dominion is the lack of restrictions. That's the third requirement under Glenshaw Glass, which says that the taxpayer must have complete dominion over the income. And our answer to that here in this case is the taxpayer doesn't have complete dominion.
You're using my example of putting down the foundation.
Right.
My vision of that is if the taxpayer used substandard concrete in that foundation and
right.
it crumbled away, that would
they
fall
would,
not under fraud, but it would fall under the other provisions.
The environmental easements is the enforceability tool. And in that circumstance, Your Honor, there is a certificate of completion. They yank that.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what happens? The state will say repay the credit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a case called Bailey that's in the tax court that involves an easement very similar to this that deals with that third requirement under Glenshaw Glass. The tax court there said the taxpayer did not have complete dominion over the facade, therefore not taxable. And our case here is much,
so
much stronger.
Presumption. There's a presumption of regularity, is there not? Once
sure.
they've been approved, once the site permits have been issued and then the certificate of completion and so on, there's a presumption that they've been properly inspected and that it the building proceeds.
At that point in time, there's an initial certificate of completion that gives the tax division in New York the authority to issue the tax credit. Now, as we've seen, that somehow as New York changed its law, it got deferred and deferred and deferred. So that even that is subject to restrictions. Your Honor, I believe I'm deep in my
rebuttal. Yeah, why don't we hear from the government? Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Douglas Rennie for the United States.
What constitutes good cause for revocation?
Your Honor, that's unclear. It doesn't appear to be defined in the New York State statutes. Your Honors, the issue in this case is whether a $1.8 million state subsidy payment, which is characterized as a tax refund but bears no relation to any taxes previously paid.
Let me follow up on you, please.
Yes.
If good cause is broad enough to include situations over which the Ginsburgs may not have control, storm, 200 year storms in 6 months, washing away the concrete.
Why do they have sufficient guarantees that they'll be allowed to keep the money for purposes of complete dominion?
Your Honor, I think the answer to that is because they're, even if the state commences some process to try to recoup the money, that means that that would almost certainly happen in a subsequent tax year,
mm-hmm.
right? So the fact is they're receiving the income now. They would probably have a corresponding deduction in a future year if they had to pay it back. But for the time being, they can spend that money however they want.
In the red brief at 4 and 5, you cite the 2007 version of the New York Environmental Conservation Law.
Yes, sir.
But the 2005 version of the tax law. Are there any material differences between 2005 and 2007?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And I believe the reason we were citing those versions is because that was the relevant year for McKinney's to issue the relevant volume for those two different laws. Oh. And those are copies of those editions that are in the record for those years, Your Honor.
But can I just go back to Judge Wallach's first initial question, which was, if something were to happen next year or in 2 years from now, and New York, and let's assume legally, can recoup the payment that they made, but your friends walked away with a much smaller portion of it, is there clearly a means in the tax law that they can then recoup the taxes paid on the amount that has since been?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
They would get a corresponding deduction for that in a future year, and that's, in essence, the tax benefit rule. It's the converse of that. Because they then had to pay it back, they would be able to take that deduction, Your Honor. Your Honor, the main argument here as to why this is not income appears to be the return of capital doctrine that the taxpayers are relying on. Your Honor, there is no precedent for applying this doctrine in this type of instance. Where it is relevant in terms of a capital asset, like a building here, is when there's a sale. And as Your Honors appear to perceive, that there is no sale here, the return of capital doctrine just doesn't apply. And there is no general principle that you don't have to pay tax until you recover your initial investment. Now, one of the examples that came up was stock. Which I think makes a good point, because
can we determine that there's not a return of capital because the Ginsburg capital is still producing wealth for them through the property?
That's correct, Your Honor. And they would recover their capital when they sell it. Currently, they're receiving rental payments, maybe other fees, any other type of money that they take in at this time, they have to pay taxes.
And in fact, the basis of that property hasn't been reduced yet.
Right, right. I think they have accounted for it. They've attempted to account for it in that manner, but their accounting does not control for federal tax purposes. So it should not be reduced. That's our position. So going back to the stock example, that would be another issue where you receive a dividend. That doesn't reduce your basis. You have to pay tax on it when that happens, just as you would, as they would with rents or anything else in this example. And a contrary result would allow states and private parties to redefine the scope of income to the detriment of the federal tax system, which I believe Your Honors were pointing out.
Well, except if one person is living in New York and the other isn't, clearly they're not going to have a large state tax liability. So very likely, but obviously New York didn't think of it this way, which is we want to give benefit to people who are really doing a lot of business in New York. But as far as the federal fisc, what is it? I mean, why are we distinguishing between people who live in one state and people who live in the same state? Essentially, the distinction is just for those who have a hefty state tax bill and those who don't. Otherwise, they forfeited, as the Ginsburg did in this case.
You mean in terms of the tax credit being refundable,
yeah,
Your Honor?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the amount that's left. You're not saying they had to pay it's not subject to tax if they had gotten it, if it's just offset their state tax payment, right?
Right.
So the only reason it ends up being federal taxable under the federal code is because they didn't have enough offset.
Because it becomes paid out.
Although, right.
If you're in a different, say it's not a refundable credit, then generally speaking, it can be carried forward to future years, which is probably the way it would work in a different state system. But our position is essentially it doesn't really matter what state it is. If a state is coming up with this type of system, if you want to do it as a tax credit and you don't want them to have to pay federal taxes on it, then it should be a non-refundable state credit. But there are different ways to subsidize different projects.
I'm sure this is going on, some variation of this goes on all around the country. Are you specifically aware of states other than New York who have had similar situation? I mean, it's kind of odd that this is like an issue that hasn't been decided yet. And one of the things that may explain this is if this is a very unusual thing to refund it in cash.
It is somewhat unusual, Your Honor. I can't recall a specific example of a different state having this type of refundable tax credit. There may have been a reference somewhere in some guidance in one of the briefs that had to do with a Michigan tax credit.
And you referred us, as I mentioned to your friend, that there have been changes in the scope of this. Does it still remain in terms of providing this payment of funds?
I believe it is still a refundable credit, Your Honor. But as counsel said, I think they reduced the scope of the tangible property credit. It's my understanding. If Your Honors have no further questions, we will rely on a brief.
Thank you.
I'd like to respond, Your Honor, to Judge Reyna's question earlier about still producing wealth and the fact that you can only recover the basis in the property at the time of sale. Well, that's actually not true. Depreciation and amortization is an example of recovery of capital. There's a case called Anaja Land Company that deals with a situation where you would have an easement that might be taken to that property. There are multiple occasions where in this particular property, it's not unique that you have to wait to the end of the investment in order to recover capital. In fact, it's basic to the federal income tax system. You're recovering capital immediately on this property.
When Mertens on the law of federal income taxation explains return of capital theory this way. When the purchaser's obligations are received as part of the consideration on a sale, but have no ascertainable fair market value at the time of their receipt, the seller may treat the full amount of the payments as they are received as a return of capital. Only those payments that are received after his entire basis has been recovered must be reported as income.
Right.
How does your return of capital theory fit into that example? What payment did you make to the state that is now being returned?
Well, again, there are numerous examples. I mean, that's one example of a return of capital. A sale is. But in the sales situation, you know, the government is suggesting that this is a third party's requirement. And I would point the court to the general counsel memorandum, the Office of Chief Counsel, which says, provided repayment has the effect, so far as its recipient is concerned, of restoring in whole or part the original outlay, it may emanate from a third party and nonetheless be considered a return of capital. It does not matter here. I mean, this is the Office of Chief Counsel. That's General Counsel Memorandum 37509, cited in our briefs. It doesn't matter that we made our original investment with, in this case, it would be the contractors and whoever we're paying out, and that New York has agreed under an agreement to reimburse us the capital expenditures. And I would say, Your Honor, just to be clear, the government has admitted in their briefing papers down below that in reality the credit is designed to reimburse the taxpayers' capital expenditures. That is very important because that is a recovery of capital. And you get to recover that capital by reducing your basis in the property And it, you know, in many cases, this is not an expense. The government says the tax benefit rule.
Is the basis in this property reduced? Was it reduced?
It's reduced through a mechanism where, in this case, we will not get a double, we will not get a windfall. The taxpayers will not get a windfall. Its depreciation allowances will get reduced because there was depreciation that would have been with the full basis. You have to reduce that depreciation allowances to account for the fact that here, this was a reimbursement of return of capital. And that's important because that happens at this point in time. When there's an ultimate sale down the road, the gain will be bigger. As a result of that. If I could, I know my time's...
But we have one quick point, sure.
So the earlier questions, Your Honor had asked about examples. I would point out that the federal government has reimbursable credits, refundable credits like this. In fact, that's how New York structured this transaction. And there's the Sunoco case. Contrary to this case, the government's position with federal tax credits that are refundable is that they are not includable in taxable income.
Thank you. We thank both sides. The case is submitted. That concludes our proceedings for this morning.
All right.